like a company. Ready!
The Chronicles of the American Civil War begins now. And here's your host, Bob O'Connor.
The years creep slowly by, Lorena. The snow is on the grass again.
Welcome to the Chronicles of the American Civil War. This is podcast number 55. It is also the third program of our second year. Cannot thank our listeners enough. I appreciate your support, and I enjoy hearing your comments and suggestions. We are broadcasting from the podcast studio of Radio Heart Media from room 205 at the Good Building, 113 West Liberty Street in Charlestown, West Virginia. Logistically, this podcast will post each week on Thursday afternoon, and it is available for free on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Google Play. I cannot tell you how much fun I'm having teaching a Civil War class for the lifelong learning folks at Shepherd University. I have 23 very interesting adult students. I've taught three classes and have three more to go. For more information on any of my 12 Civil War books, please visit my website at www.BobOConnorBooks.com. You can follow me on Facebook at Bob O'Connor Books LLC or on Twitter at Chronicles CW. You're listening to the Chronicles of the American Civil War. This is your host, Bob O'Connor. We'll be right back. Our guest today is Kevin Pollack. Kevin was a guest on podcast number 24. Way back in February when he spoke on the Battle of Shepherdstown from his fine book. Today, he makes a return visit as the first guest invited back. How about that?
Thanks for having me back.
His topic today will be the Mosby Heritage Area. Welcome, Kevin.
Thanks for having me.
First, give us a little background about who Kevin Pollack is.
I'm not originally from this area, Northern Virginia, the tri-state region, Maryland and West Virginia. I'm originally from Western New York, and got interested in history when I was just a young kid. When I was 9 years old, as I like to say, my family went on of course, every American family has to take the trip to Gettysburg right. At least once. So my family did it when I was nine, and I was hooked from there. So the rest has been downhill for pretty much everybody that's been associated with me that happens to not be interested in this stuff. But I came down here first to West Virginia. I went to Shepherd University from 2010 to 2014 and majored in history with a concentration in Civil War and 19th century America, and then minored in historic preservation. Worked at Harpers Ferry National Historical Park for a couple of seasons as a park ranger there. I'm a battlefield guide at Antietam and Harpers Ferry, and now I'm lucky enough to work as director of education for the Mosby Heritage Area.
Well, that's pretty cool. I made my first trip to Gettysburg at age 11 and remember it very well.
Very
that
good,
was
yes.
Very significant in my like of the Civil War also. For those who don't know, who was John Singleton Mosby? Where is the Heritage Area and what does it include?
The Heritage Area, I'll go ahead and start off with that first. The Heritage Area is roughly an 1,800 square mile mass of land, for lack of a better term, in Northern Virginia that consists of five counties. It's Western Prince William County, Warren County, Loudoun, Fauquier, and Clark counties. And basically what a Heritage Area is just an area that has plenty of historic resources. Still here, the historic landscape in Northern Virginia, despite all the buildup and despite all the urbanization of that area, is still incredibly much like it was at the time of the Civil War. You can still drive down old dirt roads that haven't changed course and have hardly changed how they look in 150 plus years. There's still stone walls that were there from the time of the Civil War and before. Historic structures such as churches, houses, mills. There's cemeteries and things like that. So what we try to do at the Heritage Area is really promote a sense of stewardship amongst the local population and people coming in as well, tourists and things like that, in the efforts to try and preserve this stuff. The idea being that if we can educate people about why we have all of this great historic landscape and why it's still here, that should a problem ever arise, that these roads might be paved or destroyed or buildings torn down or things like that, that people will want to step up and say, we should keep this because this building is important. So we try to take the stories from those places and connect them to buildings that people drive past every single day so that they recognize the importance of it. So we tell a lot of different stories. There's, of course, African-American history from well before the Civil War to civil rights. There are stories of the American Revolution there, Native American history as well, presidential history. But of course, one of our greatest stories is the story of John Singleton Mosby and his Rangers as they rode around throughout Northern Virginia from really the beginning of 1863 for the last 28 months of the Civil War until April of 1865. So John Mosby was somebody that most people who knew him did not expect much from him. He was born in 1833 in the southern part of Virginia, sort of as a sickly child, you could say. And when he went off to college, University of Virginia, he got into some trouble. Not only was he sickly, but he was sort of a hothead. And he shot a fellow student by the name of George Turpin. Mosby was arrested for that. He was confined in prison for a time. He was able to get out, though, not by escaping. He was essentially pardoned. But while he was in prison, he took a liking to the law. So he became a lawyer before the Civil War. And out of a sense of duty to his state, Virginia, in 1860, following the hubbub that had been caused, of course, by John Brown's raid, here in Virginia, Mosby signed up to join a local militia company. And many people wrote about him as a militiaman that they did not expect much of him at all. But by 1863, when Mosby forms a group of partisan rangers in Northern Virginia, he becomes one of the most feared Confederate soldiers in the entire Civil War. Gets nicknames as the Gray Ghost. It seems like he and his men would pop out of nowhere and in the middle of the night, attack Union outposts outside of Washington, D.C. So that was one of their missions, was to do that, to distract federal soldiers, gather intelligence, and, of course, disrupt Union supply trains as well. So Mosby was able to do that with about a total of about 1,900 men during those 28 months. But oftentimes he went out on raids with much less than that. Really, the largest force that he ever had with him was about 300 soldiers at once.
Now, tell us a little bit about partisan rangers. Wasn't there a Partisan Rangers Act that kind of defined what they did?
Correct. The Confederate Congress passed a Partisan Ranger Act in April of 1862. And essentially what that called for or allowed within the Confederate Army was that men who joined partisan ranger organizations were going to be treated as regular soldiers of the Confederate Army. But the stipulation that was made partisan rangers special is that when they captured federal supplies or things like that, they were able to keep them, essentially, or trade them into the Confederate quartermaster and make money off of that. So that was an enticement for soldiers to join the partisan rangers. Now, the Confederate Congress really debated the Partisan Ranger Act, and it actually ended up being revoked by 1864, because what was happening is there were so many partisan ranger groups that were just riding around shooting pistols and robbing people that really weren't performing acts that the Confederate Congress was proud of or that they felt represented the Confederate Army well. So by the time the act was revoked in 1864, all Confederate partisan ranger organizations were disbanded with two exceptions, and that was John Mosby's 43rd Battalion of Virginia Cavalry and, of course, McNeil's Rangers operating in Western Virginia as well.
So that must have been a fun group to belong to. You could go out and goof off and have some fun, grab some booty, get some money, come back, sleep in your own bed.
Yeah, so the Confederate cavalrymen, Confederate infantrymen in the Army of Northern Virginia would oftentimes refer to Mosby's men as featherbed soldiers or featherbed guerrillas because they were staying in the homes of civilians. Many of those homes still stand within the heritage area, and we have diary entries from both soldiers but also civilians talking about these grand parties. Of course, when the Civil War begins, the men of Northern Virginia, young men of Northern Virginia, many of them go off to war, and so the young ladies of Northern Virginia are sort of left with this void. But all of a sudden, when Mosby's command arrives, it's a huge influx of young men that have arrived once again in Northern Virginia, and so civilians would talk about greeting these soldiers, playing cards with them, having dances in the halls of their homes, things like that. And so it was a very different set of rules, so to speak, and expectations for Mosby's men than often what soldiers in the regular Confederate Army would get to experience. Of course, it could also be, well, it could be fun, robbing Union supply trains. In one case, the Mosby's men take a wagon train of ice cream intended for federal soldiers, known as the ice cream raid. They were able to take all of that stuff, and while it certainly was fun, it was also an incredibly dangerous task as well. And something that speaks to that is at one point, one young lady in the Heritage area, or in the area known as Mosby's Confederacy, she was proposed to by two of Mosby's men. And she actually accepted both proposals, of course, with the expectation that eventually one of them was going to die in battle, unfortunately. And unfortunately, that was the case, but she was you know, covering both possibilities in both scenarios.
Oh, boy.
It's a unique piece of Civil War history for sure.
Now, you have a map of the Mosby Heritage area, because I've actually, I have a friend who's a descendant of Mosby and lives in Georgia. And when she came up for a visit, we went all around on that map through Aldi and Paris. And I told her that I would take her to Paris because I'm such a good guy, you know. It was Paris, Virginia, though.
Paris, Virginia is not too bad, though.
And went on some of those back roads and everything. I've also spoken in that church that's right along 50 there.
Mount Zion right. Church. Right. Yes. Yeah. Right. Yep. We have one of our ways of getting the word out, basically, about the sites that are still standing within the heritage area and the stories is driving tours.
Right.
So we have all sorts of driving tours. We have ones that cover basically Loudoun County in World War I and sites that relate to World War I that are still standing. We have a very popular Hunting the Gray Ghost, which is a 5-part driving tour of all Mosby-related sites, skirmish sites, safe houses.
Those were the ones
you
that
name it, cemeteries, yeah.
Right.
So if you do any of those tours, and you can find them all on our website, mosbyheritagearea.org, then you can really get a sense of what the heritage area is about. And it really is, it's incredible. It's one of the few places in the country where you can truly almost drive back in time. Things have, in many cases, have not changed all that much since the time of the Civil War.
So what is your exact role as a staff member of the Mosby Heritage Area?
Pretty much anything and everything, from taking out trash to, now that's of course one tangential thing, but my title is Director of Education, and so our organization, while we do promote a sense of stewardship and preservation in terms of preserving these sites, our real goal is educating the public. But mostly what we do is educate students. And so my role is to schedule school programs with schools throughout the 5-county heritage area. And I go in, especially during the springtime, and speak with students, usually 3 programs a week, roughly from March until the end of April or early May. And share with students some of these stories, stories of slavery, stories of the American Revolution, stories of the Civil War, so that they walk away with a sense of why this place is important, why where they live is important, and why it's important to keep this stuff that we still have. So typically what we do is we take one story especially from a site that's close to the school where I'm visiting or where one of my coworkers is visiting, and we try to really relate that to the students. So it's often unique when you start telling a story and you can tell the students are leaning forward, they're interested, and then all of a sudden I bring up a picture on the board and it's a building that they drive past every single day or that's right down the road from their school. And you can really see their faces light up when history becomes that real and that close to them. Again, it's a building that they've driven past every single day and they've never thought twice about it until you tell them this story that they're going to remember, and now they remember why that building is important. And they're going to go home and tell their parents that story. We give each and every student for free, they get a scavenger hunt of history sites in their county. So the idea is that they'll be ready to go with all these stories that we've just told them, excited, and they'll go home, bring the scavenger hunt home to their parents, their friends, whatever, and they'll go out and drive the area and learn even more of the stories than what we can just fit into a 90-minute program. So those that program's been going on since 2003, our education program with students, and we are up to last year we did just under 5,500 students. We spoke with just under 5,500. So we do those programs both in school and field trip programs as well with the students. And then on the public side of things, I'm responsible for doing public education programming, so not our huge fundraisers, but again, being an education organization, we have to get the word out about the history that we have. So we schedule speakers, we do bus tours throughout the heritage area, and we do a living history. We have a living history interpretive group, all volunteer, called the Mosby Heritage Area Interpretive Group, and we do lantern light tours of four historic sites throughout the heritage area throughout the year. So our next one coming up is going to be November 3rd in a little town just south of Percival called Lincoln, which was a Quaker stronghold at the time of the Civil War. So those are all those take place Saturday nights throughout the year.
Now, I was surprised to find out that northern Loudoun County, when you look at the map and you look at the families that lived there during the Civil War, that about every other one was Union.
Correct.
And that really kind of blew me away because I think of Loudoun County as being very Confederate.
Right. Yeah. Loudoun County was really almost a microcosm of the rest of the country at that time. The northern part of the county was predominantly Unionist. In fact, in the May 23rd, 1861 statewide referendum on secession, Loudoun County went 1,626 votes in favor of secession, but a resounding 726 against secession. And most of those votes came from the northern portion of the county. And that accounted for a couple of things. The population of northern Loudoun County was made up of small German farmers or people of German ancestry that were not necessarily opposed to slavery, but on smaller farms, they didn't need enslaved peoples to be on their farm. They also, some of them did, of course, come across or grow up with the idea that slavery was wrong, was a moral sin. There are also Quakers living in that area. Of course,
yeah, Waterford.
Yeah, Waterford is a big Quaker stronghold. Lincoln, as I mentioned, or what was known as Goose Creek at the time of the Civil War, had huge Quaker populations. And of course, Quakers were pacifists. We have a lot of evidence that Quakers were active on the Underground Railroad in the years leading up to the Civil War as well. So you could see why they would not vote for secession and said they would vote against secession. And also being in northern Loudoun County, people there had closer connections to the North, not just in terms of their mindset, but financially and economically as well. Being on the northern border of Loudoun County puts you right next to the Potomac River.
Right.
And of course, right on the northern bank of the Potomac River is the Chesapeake and Ohio Canal and the Baltimore and Ohio Railroad. So for them to lose that connection would have been awful to their financial stability.
I understand my friend Rich Gillespie, longtime leader of the Heritage Area, has retired. Could you please give him my best when he shows up for one of your events?
I'm sure he's
hanging around
there. Oh, Rich is still around. Absolutely. He is my predecessor, and I still lean on him heavily for programming ideas and resources and things like that. So yeah, I will certainly pass your best along to him.
He's a good guy.
Yes, he is. Very much so.
So, Bob very graciously allows me to ask a couple of questions when we have our guests in. So, can you kind of tell us about when you kind of got this job working for the Mosby Heritage Area? What was your kind of major trepidation? Did you have any kind of fears or worries going into it?
Yeah, certainly. I had never heard what a heritage area was actually before applying for the job. So learning what a heritage area was, and I've been there for over 3 years now. It's still taken me a while to sort of craft the elevator speech about what exactly a heritage area is. So that was the big thing. And also I hadn't worked with a lot of students before. I'd talked with students on a smaller scale, working at Harper's Ferry, but sometimes I do programs where it's 180 fourth graders in a cafeteria or in an auditorium that I'm speaking to all at once. So that was a little different for me. I had to change the way I do programming a little bit to better suit fourth graders as compared to adults.
Can you talk about some of those changes?
Yeah, so it was more about storytelling and getting the stories out there to kids. I mean, really anybody, most people that come to historic sites. Of course, you'll get a few people, I'm sure, listeners to the show that want the nitty gritty, all the details that you can possibly think of. And I'm a guy that likes all that detail. But for the students and for most people that have at least an interest in history, but it's not their profession, that's all they want is they want a connection. And really, for history to thrive, it's about making it relevant to people. And if you have a story, something that they can relate to, then it becomes relevant to them. So changing my interpretive style a little bit to add in more stories and really stretching the stories out quite a bit to really fill up a lot of that time and space and make it interactive for students as well.
Good question. What's one of your favorite stories of the Mosby Heritage Area?
Oh gosh, you're putting me on the spot with that one.
You have lots of them, I'm sure.
I do have a lot of them. That's a very difficult one. Mosby, of course, anything related to John Mosby and his Rangers always seems to lend just some incredible stories, as you might imagine. Stories of soldiers, some of Mosby's Rangers hiding in hidey holes in the floorboards of homes to escape federal soldiers that were raiding throughout Mosby's Confederacy looking for them. Gosh, that's a very tough one. If I had to pick just one story. Overall, it would be, I mean, the Civil War is sort of the area that I like to focus on. But one story in particular that always sticks out for me is at a place called Wellburn. Wellburn was home to the Delaney family, and it's still in the family today. It's a bed and breakfast that you can stay at straight out of the 1860s. It has hardly changed at all, which provides it quite a historic charm. But it was a Mosby Ranger safe house, and one of the Delaney's cousins, a soldier by the name of John DeButts, was staying there one night. And as local family lore says, federal soldiers showed up in the middle of the night to raid the house and find any of Mosby's men that were staying there at Wellburn. So the young girls, the Delaney girls that were living there, woke up the few Mosby Rangers that were staying there and told them to get out of the house or hide. It was a very cold winter's night. Union soldiers came through the house. They searched every room up and down. They couldn't find a single thing. And they even went upstairs to the bedrooms. And right above the front door of the house on the second story was the children's bedroom. And as the federal soldiers walked into the bedroom, they opened up the door. And again, according to local legend, there was an old slave woman sitting in the corner in a rocking chair holding onto a candle, watching the three children as they slept. And when the Union soldiers opened up the door, she motioned to them that the children were sleeping. And she asked them to be quiet. They basically agreed, and they walked in, and they searched all around the bedroom. They looked down onto the three children that were sleeping, and as they did that, the slave sitting in the corner sort of took her hand and cupped it around the candle that she was holding to hide some of the light. And the Union soldiers looked down into the bed, and they counted the three children that were sleeping there, and then they left, having not found anything that they thought to be suspicious. So they got back on their horses and they rode away for the night. Well, John DeButts, the Delaney cousin, was laying in between the mattress and the bed frame. And the children were sleeping, or at least pretending to sleep, perhaps, on the mattress that DeButts was underneath. He nearly suffocated from the experience, but he was able to escape federal detection and, of course, escape a federal prison, at least for a time. He'd be wounded later on in the war. But for that moment, he was able to escape. And I think that says a lot to the history of the Heritage Area and to Mosby's men, that it's multifaceted. There's so many different people, groups of people that make up the history in the area.
That's a great story. I appreciate that. What are some of the upcoming events for the Mosby Heritage Area?
Our biggest upcoming event that we do an annual Civil War conference. It's called formally the conference on the art of command in the Civil War. This is our 21st year, and we bring in speakers from across the country to Middleburg, Virginia, just near where our headquarters is. And this year we're focusing on the Battle of Antietam. So that will be Friday night, October 5th through Sunday, October 7th. So there will be speakers in Middleburg Friday night and all day Saturday, followed by a dinner. And then it's a Sunday bus tour of Antietam National Battlefield. So we still have a few seats open for that. And you can get tickets on our website. We have a our large fall fundraiser, as we're calling it, sort of a raffle of various historical items, is coming up at the end of October, October 27th. And then, as I mentioned, our lantern-lit tours of a history site in the area called Legends by Lantern Light. That's going to be November 3rd in Lincoln, actually. So those will be our nearest events that are coming up.
And give us the website and everything on how to contact the Heritage Area, please.
Yeah, the website is www.mosbyheritagearea.org. Mosby is, of course, spelled M-O-S-B-Y. And you can find all of our contact information on there, our schedule of events. We have a store. You can become a member of the Heritage Area. Since we are a nonprofit, we're always looking for more members. And all the driving tours that we've talked about, you can also find those in free downloadable formats on the website for people to gather.
Please give us your schedule for lectures that are open to the public.
I will be speaking at the Civil War Conference that we have coming up in October. And in terms of open to the public, I won't be speaking until November. I'm taking a trip up to Reading, Pennsylvania to a Civil War roundtable there, and then up to New Jersey as well in the middle of November for two roundtable talks. And then I'll be traveling out to Ohio in December for another roundtable talk. So, but nothing in this area.
Well, but we have listeners in all those places.
Well, that's very true. You do. Yes.
So how can they find a schedule of when you're going to be in Reading, when you're going to be in New Jersey, when you're going to be in Ohio?
Best place to go would be on my my author page on Amazon, where I'm just new to it, but I'm trying to keep up an updated schedule of places where I'll be speaking.
Okay. And how do they find that?
Just go on to Amazon.com and type in my name, Kevin Pollack. And
okay, you'll find spell that for us.
P-A-W-L-A-K. And they'll find a couple of the books that I've authored, and they can click on my name, and that will take them to the author page from there.
If someone wants to see the Heritage Area, then all they have to do is go to the website, download a brochure. Mm-hmm. They don't have to come to the office or anything.
They don't have to. They can. Our office is in 1801, roughly circa 1801, stone building that was where John Mosby officially signed into commission the first four officers of the 43rd Battalion Virginia Cavalry. So that's pretty cool. That brings in a lot of people. It's actually undergoing renovations now on the inside. We are tearing up basically the inside to expose more of the historical elements of the house. And then we're going to be bringing in exhibits, including a timeline covering the entire history of the Heritage Area from 9500 BC until 2018. So people can come and visit us at the office, but it's really going to be something to see in a couple of months if they come by then.
And where is the office?
The office is in Atoka, which is just west of Middleburg, halfway between Middleburg and Upperville on Route 50. And Atoka is spelled A-T-O-K-A. Little community there. It's the stone house. You'll see our sign, Mosby Heritage Area, out in front.
I actually don't know where that is.
Not many people do. Atoka is an old crossroads town that the crossroads was basically obliterated when modern Route 50 came in, but there's still plenty of people that pass through it, and really that's about all they do. There's not many people that stop when they come there, but they just pass through.
Well, and that church actually has a roundabout right in front of it now.
It does,
it's
yes.
It's a modern era.
The traffic calming there.
yeah. Supposedly to get people on the north, south, and east, west routes there without going through that crossroads that was always such a traffic tie-up.
But, oh, yeah, yes.
But yeah, there's a...
I drive through there every morning.
But again, I've been on a lot of those sites, and some of those are on dirt roads, and it's pretty easy to be able to see how important those sites were, and it's a tribute to the the people that preceded the Heritage Area, that these sites are still there today and that people can go visit them.
Yeah, very much so.
I've had Eric Buckland on talking about the individual stories of the Raiders, and that's been very important. And those are archived on our program, too. Would we be able to talk you into coming back next week and talk about the Maryland campaign that you've also studied intensively?
Absolutely, I can do that.
There you go. Very good. You've been listening to the Chronicles of the American Civil War. This is your host, Bob O'Connor. We'll be right back. This weekend's events include Chicagoland Civil War show at the DuPage County Fairgrounds, 2015 Manchester Road, Wheaton, Illinois. There's also an anniversary bicycle tour of the Fort Harrison Battlefield, part of the Richmond National Battlefield Park in Virginia. And Living History School of the Soldier Camp and Demonstration at Bennett Place State Historical Site in Durham, North Carolina. Today's little-known Civil War fact is this: the largest number of casualties of any battle in the American Civil War were from the Battle of Gettysburg, with 46,286 casualties. Remember, casualties are killed, wounded, missing in action, prisoners of war. The second highest amount of casualties occurred at Chickamauga, with 34,624 casualties. Battles at both Spotsylvania Courthouse and Chancellorsville also exceeded 30,000 casualties. Today's expression that came out of the American Civil War was hospital rats. That means a soldier who faked an illness. Today in American Civil War history, September 27, 1864, the Battle of Fort Davidson took place in Missouri. On our next week's program, we will feature a return visit of Kevin Pollack, who will be talking about the Maryland campaign of 1862. To contact us, please send an email to chronicles@BobOConnorBooks.com. Got some very interesting emails and several long ones this time. Here's a recent email from Ron Biskowski. Bob, I'm from Louisiana. So with our diverse history, please feel free to list me as an international listener. Love the podcast. I've been searching for a Civil War podcast that has such informative guests and a moderator who is gracious, knowledgeable, and lets his subjects talk. Even on topics that I didn't think I was entirely interested in, your guests have kept me listening. Love the Robert E. Lee podcast, as well as the Moore Civil War Center. I would love for you to explore one of the most crucial but forgotten battles of the Civil War in the Western Theater, the Battle of Mansfield. Thanks so much. Love the show. I would appreciate hearing from somebody who might have knowledge of the Battle of Mansfield and be happy to have a podcast. I got this from Facebook this morning from William Francis. I listen from Galway, Ireland. Keep up the good work. Love those international listeners. A listener, David Steinberg from Golden Valley, Minnesota, said this: thank you for your podcast. I started reading Lincoln and his admirals upon the show recommendation. I was happy to learn about Captain Robert Smalls, understanding the role of the U.S. Navy along the rivers. I would think that this led to the creation of the U.S. Coast Guard. He also offered several suggestions of future topics. I'm always looking for topics. Thank you, Daniel. This last email comes from Corey Gray of iJamsville, Maryland, which is near Frederick. I love your podcast. I've learned so much about the nuances of the war and the people. My learning style is very much audio, so I'm not much of a reader. In the early 90s, I heard stories of the Gray Ghost and was ecstatic that I found your podcast about John Mosby. I'd love to make a suggestion. Have you covered the story of how the Maryland Capitol was moved to Frederick, Maryland, while they were having debates as to whether to secede from the Union? Then Lincoln had a bunch of secessionists arrested so they couldn't vote. Thanks for your podcast. Thanks, Corey. I appreciate your comments and suggestions. I didn't know about the Maryland Capitol, but I did know that Lincoln had arrested a bunch of secessionists and put them in the fort in Baltimore so they couldn't vote. Thanks again to my ace producer, Mark Guiney, and today's guest, Kevin Pollack. Thanks to you for listening. Please join us next week, same time, same podcast locations, for the Chronicles of the American Civil War. This is your host, Bob O'Connor.
The years creep slowly by, Lorena. The snow is on the grass again. The sun's low down the sky, Lorena. The frost gleams where the flowers have been.